Hunter College in New York City. Kelsey, are you there?
Hi, Dennis. This is Kelsey.
Good. I'll let you take it from here. I have not much voice, but I'll save it for opportune times. And why don't you introduce us with you, and let's get going.
Well, I hope you start feeling better. So we had four MSWSN members, and we'll start off with Cindy.
Hi.
It's Cindy. Kate, hello. And Cassie.
Hi.
And we'll start with Kate.
Sure. So just to give our listeners a little bit of background about the MSWSN and what we do, MSWSN stands for Macro Social Work Student Network. We were founded here at Silverman in 2011 as a student-led network created by and for macro practice students. And this network really came out of students' experiences in the classroom, where the curriculum really tends to privilege the clinical perspective. And so what we seek to do is promote macro practice really as a vital element of social work practice. And just to clarify, when we're talking about macro practice, we're really talking about social work education and social work practice that looks at changing larger systems and structures and policies.
The Macro Gang would love to have you call and chat with them. You can do that by calling 347-327-9168. Who's next?
This would be Kathy. Something else that the MSWSN looks at are the classrooms, so the students as learners and the relationship that we have with professors. And as Kate mentioned earlier, classes privilege the clinical students. We're a small cohort at Hunter. There's like 37 of us in our class this year, and there's about 700 students total in our year. And so what we think is very important is helping students advocate for themselves as learners when they want to focus on macro issues such as policies and systems, but also to help professors who are teaching classes like human behavior that are heavy in clinical skills, showing macro-focused students how those skills can be used within communities and within systems to help our clients and the communities in which they live to thrive within those systems.
Some of our callers are not familiar with the terms micro and macro. Could you all explain the difference? That's a piece of professional jargon that may not be used by everyday people who actually are engaged in community development, planning, and things like that.
Sure. This is Cindy. Micro-macro is very industry term, so we'd be happy to break that down. Often when we look at micro, we look at the individual, right? So we're looking at human behavior, we're looking at, you know, case management, we're looking at how do we help the welfare of an individual, specifically their mental health often is a form of social work that a lot of people are familiar with. So you see case management, all these things where you're working with one person. Macro is much more so you're looking at the context in which that person you're serving, you know, exists. So you're looking at things like, well, what neighborhood are they in, the socioeconomic status, the systems and the structures that then shape that. How does racism come to play? How does public policy like welfare or different pieces shape their reality and their ability to thrive and to be well? So you're looking at the bigger picture and all those forces that shape the context in which that individual is attempting to thrive and what that, how the context needs to shift or change or be restructured or reconstructed so that individual can do well. So I don't know, does that help answer? Any other things I can clarify?
Yes, I think so. Later on, we'll talk about some jobs and things like that that the examples will play forth. Go ahead.
Great.
Great, yeah, and also to mention, too, I mean, as far as micro and macro relate to social work education, right now, you know, as master's in social work students, we're pretty entrenched in the school setting. So with MSWSN, When students go into schools of social work, usually they have different choices as to whether or not to focus as clinical students or macro-level students. And that macro specialization tends to have different names at different schools. So here at Silberman, we call it community organizing, planning, and development. But there might be some listeners or other students out there who go to schools where their programs might be called administration or just like a variety of other different names that it might go by.
Go ahead.
Or it's just to say, you know, so when we say the micro and macro, another important thing to highlight is that it's not a dichotomy. So often we're set up like you do one or the other and they can be compartmentalized. That's a false notion. Really, I mean, they feed into each other. You look at the individual and how the individual is shaped by the environment and how the environment is also shaped by the individual. So these two things are constantly talking to each other. And I know that Cassie has some great examples on what this looks like in the classroom in terms of curriculum and student experiences with trying to navigate these two intersecting elements of social work practice.
Our number here is 347-327-9168. Call and you get right on the air with the Macro Gang from Silberman.
This is Kathy. Something that I experienced was I had a great human behavior professor who was able to teach clinical skills, so very therapeutic one-on-one skills, the practitioner and the client. But she was also great about how to frame those same interview skills and reading body language, finding cues from the client, and how to use them within community work, which is what the Macro Student Network is all about, something that we try to focus on. So, again, to highlight what Cindy said, it's about not pairing them against each other, that they work together to create a holistic view of the clients and where social workers work and also live, working and living within a community as a person who is LGBT or a woman of color working in her own community. Balancing those things, the micro has to be present as well as the macro. And so that's what we as a student organization try to help other students and professors learn about, because we believe that both pair quite nicely together.
I think it would help our listeners if you gave some specific skills that you were learning in some of your classes. For example, I taught in this area a long time ago, and I would teach my students how to run meetings. I would teach them how to write grant proposals, how to organize people to raise money. What are some skills that you're going to have or that you think you're going to have?
Hi, Dennis, this is Kelsey. So one thing that really stuck to me last semester was we had some really great professors really taught us about coalition building. And so some of the work that I'm currently doing, I'm an intern with Brooklyn Defender Services, and we've been doing some really great work. Our coalition, Jailed Action Coalition, is working to end solitary confinement here in New York City. And from what I was able to take from that classroom, you know, about how to run a meeting or how coalitions work and the different dynamics that are all played into it have really helped me in understanding this own coalition, because it's made up of not just activists, you know, experts in their field, but also community members and those who've been formerly incarcerated. And so, you know, these skills on just coalitions alone have helped me tremendously. And you know, and I think, and you know, if you want to, and also with our clinical classes, looking at the biopsychosocial, you know, I think for some, especially in community organizing, we might not see, at first you don't see like, well, how does biopsychosocials really help us in at a community level? But in fact, I mean, just give an example of my own work with solitary confinement and working around prison reform, you know, to really understand how on an individual basis, looking at human development and brain development within adolescence, you know, that really plays out onto a larger scale in the policy area. I mean, in the news lately, solitary confinement in 2016 will be banned for 21 and younger. And to really understand all those, you know, personal mental health concerns really play into how are we forming our policies, how are we discussing the change that needs to happen. And so, you know, alone, like you know, looking at our clinical classes and our macro classes, micro-macro, like, they come together so well that has really helped me just in my own field placement.
Well, and also, it's Cindy again. I've also been using a lot of my training on trauma. I took an elective specifically on trauma work with some of the work that my organization is doing around the Black Lives Matter movement and protests. I'm working at Union Theological Seminary's Center for Race, Religion, and Economic Democracy. And as we create a lot of space to organize and to get our voices heard and to create clear strategic visions for how there needs to be reform with the police and with the criminal justice system as well as various other systems, we're working with the traumatized individuals, right, and traumatized communities who have been historically traumatized. And so you think about not just, well, what do we need to do to sort of cast a new vision and get those systems and structures in place, but how do we really leave space for people's pain and to, like, allow those who have been most affected to lead this movement while acknowledging what they need to heal in the process. So as social workers, we hold both. We hold the strategic vision casting, and we create holding spaces for those most impacted to get healing and then be their own agents of change. And so that's been a great place to see clinical skills of trauma work connect with, you know, macro community organizing skills of policy changing and structural changing.
Well, thank you both. We have a caller. I'll put them on live, and to save my voice, I'll welcome them and see what they want to talk about.
Hello,
520 area code. Welcome to Macro Matters.
Well, thank you. My name is Mark, and I'm calling just to, first of all, thank you, students, for doing such a superb job of bringing this matter forward, and you're explaining things very, very well. Historically, social work has been engaged in changing conditions that affect people, not just changing people who are affected by conditions. And over the years, that commitment to social change and social justice seems to have diminished. And fairly recently, one of the social work pioneers, Jack Rothman, wrote a report and he was able to document the marginalization of macro practice, these broader areas of involvement in social work that you've been describing. My question to you is, as students, how can, with your students doing a superb job organizing through this macro social work student network, and so that will develop a strong student voice. So my question is, how can a strong student voice help strengthen social work education in macro practice?
Sure. So this is Kate. This is just one perspective on your question, but I mean, I think that student voice is essential to improving macro practice because we are the people who have our fingers on the pulse of the training that we're receiving as future social workers. And I think, you know, I'm speaking for myself here, but perhaps it's true of the other members of MSWSN that are here in the room with me. But when I read the Rothman report for the first time, it really resonated with me because a lot of what was reflected in the report, the study of, you know, schools of social work across the country, really felt true of my experience here at Silverman, which was a sense of marginalization and perhaps not getting the hard skills that I felt that I might need in the workplace as somebody who's interested in working in policy and interested in working in more of like a structural or systemic context. And so I think that those experiences might not come to light if not for students speaking up about them.
Thank you. I'm just curious, do others have an opinion as well?
I would offer this, Mark. That there are many things that a student organization can do. One of those, I would say, ought to be on the Hunter College campus. And I would say that for every school, because it is on your campus where you have the most influence, the most visibility. Sort of get your wings, try something out, see what you can do in relation to something that would matter at Hunter College.
You know, one of you, I forget who mentioned it, talked about, you know, when you're talking about trauma and other sorts of things, that the people who are most affected by condition should be the people who are leading the change. And so it seems that students certainly are critically affected by social work education. And so it's good to see that you are in the forefront of leading some change. What kind of support should you be receiving, or would you like to receive from faculty or others within social work education, so that those of you, students, are not only the recipient of whatever changes might occur, but you are really helping to lead that change?
This is Kathy. Something that comes to mind, it's such a small gesture, but professors that I've had are very good about sending follow-up emails, even after class is done, over winter break or summer or right before the class is over, and asking for feedback. Some professors do icebreakers in the beginning. Some professors do a 10-minute break halfway through class. Some professors have strict rules on tardiness. Some don't. And they ask for feedback from students. And that is something that I always take advantage of and send feedback, both positive and sometimes negative, but constructive. And professors just allowing for that space. Because we have evaluations that you have to fill out, and they're bubbles, and you rate, you know, 1 through 5, I agree and don't agree. But sending the email, for me, just validates my experience as the learner and letting my professor know what was very helpful, whether the PowerPoints were engaging, and asking for tips. And if professors set up an environment where the student feels comfortable and can speak to the professor's teaching style and be honest, I think that relationship can be very important. So that's such a small gesture, but it's always something that I appreciate for my professors, especially here at Silberman.
Two examples I would give of what's happened in other communities is, one is a macro organization of students has joined with the school's advisory council to raise money for some scholarships. And this one school did this by having the professionals in the area put on workshops on a day and make the fee to come to the workshops very low. All that money then went to the scholarship funds. This school was so successful that they raised $1,500 for scholarships. Another thing is to take on an advocacy role. Maybe there's something about a policy in the university or in your school that needs to be discussed. See what you can do to get it discussed in an open forum way. What are you guys thinking as we throw these ideas at you?
I'm thinking I would love one of those scholarships. So if there are any sort of like retroactive scholarships, you know, for people who would be very happy to receive them. I'm also thinking those are great ideas because the economic piece is very, very important for any student. And I also think about, you know, getting students in, you know, to have access to social work through scholarships and all these things is such a crucial step. And then I would say that a follow-up step is we really need to have mechanisms of communication between faculty and students so there can be a constant, you know, reevaluation of what's working, what's not, where are we missing the point? Because if students are leaving feeling, you know, like I didn't get the training I need as a macro practitioner, like I want to work in the community and I just spent thousands of dollars and I didn't get the training I need, that's an issue. That's an issue, one, because the communities they're going to serve are going to be underserved, and two, they won't keep referring others to that school of social work, and we'll see a plummet. And I think going off a little bit of what Cassie was saying earlier in terms of professors sending up follow-up emails, to me the crucial piece of that was that they kept communication open. And I think that if social work education and curriculum wants to really evolve to be as powerful and as relevant and as holistic and well-balanced as it needs to be to truly train powerful practitioners, faculty need to be willing to hear from students. They need to be willing to really analyze their own, you know, pedagogy, need to be willing to ask students, what do you need, and to be vulnerable enough to acknowledge where they might have shortcomings in their practice no one practitioner is going to have done it all, you know, like have a perfect balance between clinical work and community work. And that's completely fine and expected in human. And then that's where student experience can help fill in the gap in either identifying areas for future development or bringing in other professionals from the community to fill in that. So I think that conversation and those mechanisms of communication, so that once a student gets the social work, can get through a positive process and leave truly where they, in a great way, would be what would be helpful.
Well, thanks again for the work that you are doing and strengthening that student voice so that communication can occur. If people are willing to listen but no one is speaking up, then not much happens. So thank you for speaking up and organizing other students to speak up and for the great job that you're doing on this show and helping us to understand the links between things like the micro or the clinical or the focus on individuals and small groups as well as the broader community and policy matters, and that those are not exclusive dimensions, but there's kind of a bridging among those approaches. So thank you very much for your work, and I'll just be quiet now and just listen into the rest of the show.
Well, I hope you won't be quiet, Mark. I hope you'll join us. I have an idea for everybody. It just came to me. A very hot topic now is community policing. This topic has been sort of taken from us by the criminal justice system, which is fine. We really need to have in America an entire network of community policing. And when you really get into, when you find out how this works and it works well, you would find that it's got all kinds of social work elements, social work values, and it helps the police work together. What do you guys know in your community or other communities that could be done to bring about a better community policing program?
Can you explain what you mean by community policing?
In a lot of areas, people don't talk to each other. So I'm giving you really a big hint here. So what a student group could do is be a facilitator to get certain groups of people to start talking to each other. One is about community neighborhood policing.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, one of the things that MSOUSN is trying to do right now is to sort of supplement the social work education is figure out how we can bring in different organizers and different, you know, field sites that are doing the work that we're interested to do to help us, you know, stretch our imaginations on how we can go into communities and facilitate conversations, look at really relevant issues right now like community policing and the criminal justice system. And so I think that student-led groups, you know, like the Macro Social Work Student Network, what thing we're able to do is coordinate with our faculty, look at things like Common Day, which is a day of workshop, to really hear from the communities what work is being done and to familiarize students with, oh, this agency is working at it, like this in the South Bronx, this agency is doing this great work in Queens, and something that, you know, we can only teach ourselves so much, but something we can do is then advocate to bring these great organizations into these educational spaces, and then connecting students with field placements and what's happening. One of the things we're working right now is a video series that shows, like, well, what does macro work look like, where we're highlighting alumni who talk about this is the work we're doing in the community. So bringing that education to light, bringing it into the classrooms, bringing students to those places so we can really sit at the feet of communities and have them teach us what they've been doing, and then we know how to contribute to that work. So on our end, that's a piece. I don't know if anyone else has any ideas.
Yeah, I mean, one cool thing, too, is that we are a network, and we're a national network of different schools of social work across the country. So to take sort of a macro-level look at learning a little bit more about macro practice, something I think that we've benefited from and are having the opportunity to benefit from even more as we develop closer bonds with our different national chapters is really learning from each other, learning from other students of social work and other social work practitioners who might not be based here at Silverman, who might not be based here in New York, But, you know, having the opportunity to talk to people all over the country and learn what they're doing in their communities and to bring it back here and see how that can be applicable both within our school and within, you know, sort of the New York City community.
Those are excellent ideas. If you would like to join the Macro Gang and Macro Matters, call 347-327-9168. Spare my voice and call. I might mention to you that another thing that macro students do is look carefully at who else is involved in much the same process that you might not normally think of. One example is your public library system. We here at the American Family have actually done a bunch of local shows on, on services that the library is providing for families. They have resources. They're interested in the same thing you are, and they might help you a great deal. I have to stop and pause for a second.
I think the library is a great idea. I work at True Colors Fund, which is a macro agency working to end LGBT youth homelessness, and we always mention libraries as a great resource of how to reach families, with an emphasis, of course, on homeless youth experiencing homelessness. That and tattoo parlors, which are two places you don't think of to look for youth experiencing homelessness. So that's something that I've learned to think outside the box, basically, and that's part of my education, but my field placement specifically. So that's a great idea. I didn't even think of that for the MSWSN. I appreciate that.
One of the goals of social work is to bring the middle into the operation on any issue. You're going to have vocal people usually taking sides. I always look to see who else could we bring into a discussion. And it is that middle class, the silent majority, that frequently will determine an outcome. We are going to end in a little bit here, but what are the jobs that you think people are going to get in macro practice?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are actually quite a big variety of jobs out there for macro social work. And the thing is that we don't really talk about that. We don't really know actually how to look for them or how to how to sell ourselves when it comes to interviews. And actually, I would like to thank Rachel West for her wonderful handouts and really her website and her help for ourselves as well. I think when macro social work students are looking for jobs, you can look in policy positions, you can look in advocacy positions,
you can also look a lot in the religious sector for those who are based in, faith communities. You see a lot of, faith-based organizing that's happening as well. You can look at the PISO network, as well as, I come from a religious background, so I see a lot of churches these days who are looking to do community development and develop those pieces. Social workers definitely have a place in that. What about you, Kate?
Yeah, I would say there's also research opportunities for students who studied social work, especially with different types of participatory research where, you can really incorporate those clinical skills with different macro-level skills of looking at the broader picture.
Those are excellent ideas. Go ahead.
That's it. We'll know more.
I would add to it. I would add to it.
Like we were saying, the social work helper website, she does webinars that give great training on different terms you could look for, how to conduct a job search for macro jobs, and she has everything down from field operative to parents, community educational liaisons in schools, to a whole bunch of things. So we would highly recommend checking that out.
Okay, that's excellent. I do callers. We've exceeded well over 30 minutes. You've given us a lot of great ideas and great thoughts, and you've represented the profession well. I'll turn to you all to give an ending word, and then we'll end today's show.
Yeah, I would just like to make an announcement to any students out there who are interested in either joining the Macro Social Work Student Network or creating their own chapter in their schools. So please visit our website at MSWSN.org, or they can email us at MSWNetwork@gmail.com, and I'd be happy to help you set up your own chapter and provide any kind of educational materials that you might be interested in, because we love to grow this network across the country. And thank you for having us.
And we hope you feel anybody better. Else? We need your voice back as soon as possible. It was lovely to chat with you.
Well, I do feel pretty good. It's my voice that sounds terrible. It's probably more painful to hear me than anything. I'm sorry I had to join you in this circumstance. Let's do it again, and maybe I'll have more voice. In any case, this has been the Macro Gang from Hunter College, Macro Matters. We have a show every month, and the last Wednesday. Join us. This is The American Family. Journey well, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.